Just who wants to make not America, but the world great again? It isn't Donald Trump. And how would he go about doing this?
We have a job here. And our job is not just to watch the news. Our job is not just to talk about the news. Our job is to preach the gospel. Our job is to reach out to the unsaved. Our job is to live godly life. Our job is to be an example, to be a watchman, to be a trumpet, to make a difference.
This is Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. This hour, Jan meets with one of the speakers scheduled to appear October 7th at the next Understanding the Times conference. Amir Sarfati has been Jan's radio guest numerous times before. Amir appears today while on a teaching assignment in Mexico. His discussion with Jan begins with the issue of how Europe is being primed for a one-world government. We have reached Amir in Mexico, where he is conducting meetings, and apologize that the telephone reception was not the best. So, let's get started. Here's Jan Markell.
He's the choice of a country desperate for change, a politician who's neither left nor right, part of the French establishment yet never before elected, a fresh face who served in the outgoing government. So who is Emmanuel Macron? To his supporters, he's their Emmanuel, their political messiah, a provincial boy from outside the establishment who worked his way to power.
Vive la France!
He's a new man to politics.
He's trying to find new solution.
He really is a new face.
He's our hope.
But he went to France's most prestigious schools, met its most powerful people, and made millions in an investment bank. A former colleague says Macron's rise is partly down to charm, but that at heart he's a secretive man.
He's able to tell people what they really want to hear.
And welcome to the program. And that's just a tease because we're going to talk a little bit about Emmanuel Macron, many other things as well. Glad you could join Understanding the Times Radio. My guest today says the world has an expiration date. And we're going to ultimately ask if you're ready for that date. My guest, Amir Sarfati, also says that we are frankly in the most exciting times, the most interesting times since the days of Jesus Christ on earth. Amir is one of my speakers at Understanding the Times 2017, Saturday, October the 7th. He's founder of Behold Israel. He is a native-born Israeli, an officer in the IDF, and a Bible teacher around the globe. He has a large footprint in the electronic media. We'll say more about that. He's on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, his website, beholdisrael.org. He also leads tours in Israel where you will get the biblical and eschatological angle like no other. Amir Sarfati, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jan. It's an honor.
Where to start? You know, I think I'd like to just briefly revisit your message you gave at Understanding the Times 2016, and it was titled Europe Preparing for the Antichrist. Let me just give a couple of bullet points, and then I'm going to ask a question of you. But in that message, you trace some of the occultic roots that go back, quite frankly, to the Tower of Babel or Babel. The tower was an attempt to prove there was no God or else to replace God. And over the years, Brussels, Belgium has sort of become the headquarters of all that they tried to do at Babel, occupying a building similar to the Tower of Babel, and near it, a woman riding the beast. And then you trace the occult roots that Europe has from, you included, and I'm skipping a lot because you had an hour-long message. You talked about the Freemasons, you talked about the Illuminati, you talked about all of them and more, sort of worshiping Satan, coming against God. You talked about CERN, even about the dedication of the Gotthard Base Tunnel, June 1st of 2016. Explain why you emphasized the dark side of Europe.
I'm not sure the Europeans see that as dark side. For them, it's obviously not, but for us, the believers, we must be very careful because Satan always appears as an angel of light. And for them, these are all noble things. I mean, going all the way back, even, I believe, to the Tower of Babel, those people didn't think they're doing anything wrong. In Europe itself, we see how there was an attempt no longer to go to physical Babylon, but as you remember in my message, is to import Babylon into the continent of Europe. This is why it's a mystery Babylon, because it's not the traditional location. It's the spirit of Babylon with the mindset of Babylon that was literally, physically, and spiritually imported into Europe. And with that, of course, the satanic worship, the Luciferian worship, the occult, and Europe has been doing that for so long. And unfortunately, the American establishment, whether it's the business one, whether it's the religious one, whether it's the educational one, has been or had been tremendously affected by that which came out of Europe. Every time American scholars would go to Europe, they'll come back with all that, garbage and spread it out. So Europe has not only been importing it, but exporting it to the rest of the world. Yeah. And that's a point of concern, as you know.
Well, it was a fascinating message, one of the more fascinating I've heard. And of course, I've been doing conferences. I think we're on our 21st or 22nd. But that message was extremely unique. And then the pictures that you had to go along. Folks, you can get a set of DVDs of that event back October 2016. We're kind of leading up, just where is Europe going with all of the kind of satanic involvement that it keeps inviting. Amir, Europe, I think, is ready for someone to rise and solve its many problems. And, you know, like you pointed out in this particular message, you know, they've added a new ingredient, and that is this massive immigration, which it's not only destabilized Europe, this immigration, it's on the verge of destroying Europe. It's certainly not what it was 50, 60 years ago with all the immigration. And it's, of course, it's turned very anti-Israel. And again, it's focusing on such paganistic things. But then you and I have both been watching a young man, and he is young, he's not even 40, Emmanuel Macron, and you and I have been writing about him. And when he turns up on the cover of the Economist magazine, it's a picture of him literally walking on water, and the caption underneath it is asking if he's the savior of Europe. My goodness, we had to pay attention to this.
Yeah, very much so. I think the New York Times already detected that probably earlier, weeks before, talking about this is the guy who will revive Europe. And I'm always reminded of what I thought about the revival of the Roman Empire. And so speaking with the language of the guy will revive Europe, and then the guy will be the savior of Europe. But let's not forget, Emmanuel Macron has assumed upon himself a position that is beyond Europe. I mean, if you remember, a few days after his election, for the first time in history of presidents elected in France, the guy goes on camera, speaks perfect English to the rest of the world, and basically talks about the move of Donald Trump, President Trump, to pull out of the Paris Agreement. And he basically said, although I respect the president's decision, I am actually calling, I think it's a mistake, and I call everyone that are on board with us for the climate change to actually come over to France and to Europe, and we will gladly take care of you, because we need to make our planet great again.
Right.
He's beyond Europe now. I mean, the guy is now assuming upon himself the leader of the climate change effort on behalf of the whole universe.
Right. I noticed this, and he spoke in English, which he rarely does. This is just a very, very interesting character. There are some other things that we need to bring into the discussion. First of all, I want to clarify why we're even focusing on Europe right now. And folks, you're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have on the line from Mexico, because he's been having meetings in Mexico. He's on his way out today, I believe. Amir Sarfati, one of my speakers, coming up October the 7th. But Amir, you and I are referring to the book of Daniel, particularly Daniel 9, and particularly Daniel 9:27, which speaks of Daniel's 70th week, the time of Jacob's trouble. And we believe, anyway, because it's the city that destroyed Jerusalem in 70 AD, that would have been Europe, probably from the region of Rome, that the European Antichrist is going to come along, double-cross Israel, go into the temple halfway through the tribulation, and declare himself God. That's why we are interested in Europe. I know other theologies have come along in more recent years that would they'd want to debate us. But let's just look a little bit more at Emmanuel Macron. He's a globalist. He had globalist backing. He's even stated the French culture does not exist. And yet he had a resounding victory saying the French culture, I guess a globalist would say the French culture doesn't exist.
It's amazing how we have to draw a direct line, and it has to be very clearly indicated, to the first savior in the last 10 years, Obama, that was sent by the one world government elite to spread the Arab Spring, and basically, I would call it a two-stage effect. The first one was, of course, the most devastating time the Arab world has known in decades, with over 500,000 casualties and millions of displaced people. And that, of course, pressed Europe, and Europe, under so much pressure, started seeing the rise of the far right wing. And Europe, with its guilt trip and guilt feelings of what happened there in the 1930s and 40s, sure, was so panicky that it was willing to choose someone they don't even know, as long as we don't get someone who reminds us of our past.
Yeah.
And so that was one process. And the second, not in time-wise, but in probably simultaneously, is, of course, that which happened in Syria that brought Russia and Turkey and Iran to our border and caused Netanyahu to start looking for allies in Africa and basically left only Sudan and Libya outside of the African game. And by doing so, we have the five countries that Ezekiel is describing already ganging up around Israel and waiting for the right moment to do something. So we see that what Obama did, I'm not sure he's that smart. I think that he didn't know it's going to happen, but I think the people behind him who pulled the strings were hoping it's going to happen. He basically prepared the Middle East and prepared Europe. And everybody, all the time, always speaking about what's going on in the Middle East. It's a good thing for us to also see what's going on in Europe and understand how Europe is getting ready for the Antichrist. Now, remember, Jan, my message started actually in Daniel 2. We talked about Daniel's interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream.
Yes.
So we can understand what is that last empire of the feet and, with the clay and iron, and how Jesus is the one who will destroy it. So obviously the return of Jesus will destroy an empire. And we see how it started there. And then, of course, we went to the seventh chapter of Daniel to see Daniel's vision of the beast with the 10 horns and how the three are plucked out and one comes out there. And that is, of course, speaking pompous words. And then we move to, obviously, chapter 9, to the 70th week.
Right.
So there's a process here that we see that happens. Simultaneously, we see both the Middle East geared up and Europe geared up for two major events that are going to happen, which I'm not sure if we are even going to see them.
Yeah, so, you're right. We may not see them. I don't want to quite leave one topic yet because I think it's so important. And listeners may think this is silly when I bring this up. I don't believe it is. And that is, and you referenced it. You referenced the environmentalism, the Paris climate deal that America pulled out of, and some think, well, this is kind of nonsensical. Why are you even talking about it? And I want to clarify something here, Amir, and that is, this is an effort of the globalists, this environmental movement, because they've tried wars to bring about a one-world system. They tried currency manipulation. George Soros tried that to bring about a one-world. All of this failed. And then now they're trying environmentalism to bring about a one-world system. And therefore, the leaders of the world have to be on board with the environmental worship the earth agenda, which again, Emmanuel Macron and just about everybody in Europe, except America's Donald Trump, is on board. Donald Trump is this strange guy who has thrown the globalists for a complete... They are so lost because of what happened.
By the way, it's not except Donald Trump. If you really think about it, all the developing countries and even all the Arab countries, they're not on board. They understand we're not going to invest trillions of dollars and lose hundreds of thousands of jobs for all of this nonsense. They're just not. So it's the elite that is leading that.
It is the elite.
They're using the leading countries, of course, in Europe, and of course influencing through Europe the United States and other countries. But we have to remember, it starts from Europe and it projects to so many different parts of the world. But when Trump says, hey, we need to make America great again, we need to bring back jobs, we need to bring it up back the economy, we need to restore our military, I mean, he's basically speaking the normal language of a regular, normal politician that is being elected. I mean, how bad is it to restore your country, to restore your economy, to restore your military? We had gone to the far extreme, brainwashed tremendously by that New World Order and new climate change trick, to the point that we call the good things evil and the bad things good. And just so you know, the Arabs detect that, and therefore they're willing to do business with this guy. They think this guy is down to earth. He understands the problems. He understands the enemies. He understands what's going on. He knows the deception. And although he's a great friend with Israel, although he loves the Jewish presence in Jerusalem, we're willing to live with that. Can you imagine? They're willing to live with a Donald Trump that is supporting Israel and Jerusalem as its capital, because they know that the other options are all deceitful and they're all junk and they're all out of this world. They don't buy that.
I'm going back to the European issue just for another second here, because I think this fall you are going to build on that message, Europe ready for the Antichrist. I think you're going to kind of give part two to that message, am I right? At least in one of your messages.
Yes, I'm definitely going to do that, because I'm always afraid that things will be taken out of context. And I believe that it's important to be on the alert and on guard, but not to jump to the wrong conclusions. So I'm going to be setting all the facts on the table, and then together we're going to reason, okay, what is it that we can conclude from it, and what is it that we better not conclude from it.
Okay. All right. Again, the date for that, folks, is Saturday, October the 7th. Joining Amir will be Pastor J.D. Farag, Calvary Chapel, Connie Ohe, Hawaii, Michelle Bachman, Dr. Mark Hitchcock, and others, yours truly, will all be there to welcome you for that particular all-day conference, Saturday, October the 7th, just outside Minneapolis, Minnesota. We'll have CDs and DVDs about a month later, so you won't miss anything if you would like to just sign on and get those. And by the way, Amir, Gateway Pundit online says, talking about Emmanuel Macron, all in all, it is extremely difficult to place where Macron stands and who he is, but his impact on the state of the world could be massive. He's also been nicknamed Jupiter for a reason. I guess Jupiter is the all-powerful Roman god of heaven and earth who embodied a sense of morality. So anyway, just some interesting tidbits about Emmanuel Macron, and we're going to move on from that and talk about some other issues, but I wanted to at least let you all know that we're paying attention to what's going on in Europe, and I think you need to as well. Stick around, folks. I'm coming back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
You will very likely want to hear this edition of Understanding the Times with Amir Sarfati again. You can do that very easily. Just click or call. Online, visit olivetreeviews.org, or to order an audio recording, phone 763-559-4444. Just a reminder, Amir's conference message this coming October 7th will be a continuation of what he delivered at last fall's weekend event. If you haven't already, we encourage you to get a video of Understanding the Times 2016 to hear Amir's previous message. You can ask about that when you dial 763 1-800-559-4444. You can also write to us at Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. Jan and Amir return right after this. We are finalizing our 21st Understanding the Times Conference for October 7 at Grace Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, just outside of Minneapolis. Please consider joining us from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. There is no cost or registration needed, but you need to make hotel reservations early. Meet believers from across America who take our time seriously but have a hope and expectancy many do not have. Our speakers include Amir Sarfati.
Thessalonians chapter 4, he says, the dead in Christ will rise first, and then we that are alive will be caught up in the air. In other words, he was completely sure it's going to happen in his lifetime. And that's the way we should live, as if it is going to happen at any given minute.
Dr. Mark Hitchcock.
And to me, that's a great picture of Bible prophecy for us. Knowing what's coming gives you peace of mind. And the Bible tells us that prophecy has a calming influence on our lives.
Pastor J.D. Farag.
That's not to be dismissive of the seriousness of what's happening in the world today. But thankfully, we have prophecy in the Bible that tells us not only what's going to happen at the time of the end, but why it's going to happen and where it's going to lead. And by the way, spoiler alert, we win.
Michelle Bachman.
These people don't give up. That's what we don't understand. That is everything for them, is their strategy to get to one world government. And they will do anything, including lawless actions, to get there.
Visit our website for details, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Or call us at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Helping you stay informed on issues that could change your life.
Many of the churches nowadays, buildings are beautiful, facilities are so great, but is it really truly Jesus that is being worshipped in those places? But I never ever bought that thing that the Antichrist is a Muslim, simply for three reasons. One, I don't know a single Jew that will ever claim that a Muslim is his Messiah. Two, I don't know any single Muslim that will have peace with the Jews. And third, I don't know a single Muslim leader that will actually allow the Jews to have a temple on the Temple Mount. So, you know, that alone is, to me, absurd to even think about.
Jan Markell's radio guest today, Amir Sarfati, is a prolific teacher and conference speaker. You can come hear Amir and the entire speaking team in person at the next Understanding the Times conference. For full details on that October 7th event, please visit our website, olivetreeviews.org. Now, let's return to the conversation.
Today, I'm pleased to welcome President Abbas to the White House for his first visit to Washington in quite a while. Almost 24 years ago, it was on these grounds that President Abbas stood with a courageous peacemaker, then Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. Here at the White House, President Abbas signed a declaration of principles, very important, which laid the foundation for peace between the Israelis and Palestinians. The President and Mr. President, you signed your name to the first Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement. You remember that well, right? And I want to support you in being the Palestinian leader who signs his name to the final and most important peace agreement that brings safety, stability, prosperity to both peoples and to the region.
And welcome back. And I'm talking for the hour with Amir Sarfati. And I'll give more information about him as we move along. You can certainly look up his website, beholdisrael.org, beholdisrael.org. I will say that he gives regular updates on Facebook, certainly on YouTube, other places as well, Instagram. I highly recommend that you stay apprised of the issues of the day with his various updates, Facebook Live, and then the transferred to YouTube. So we're going to continue talking for the hour. And Amir, we've had some very, very interesting Middle East developments here over the summer. And I just played a clip there of President Trump. And of course, he visited with Mahmoud Abbas. This is several weeks ago now. And I think he was a little bit fooled by Abbas. I think you would agree with me that there is now the hope for peace. As a matter of fact, sort of the chief strategist is President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Your thoughts on all this?
I think that President Trump was fooled by Abbas when Abbas came to visit him in Washington. And I think that when President Trump visited Israel and, of course, Bethlehem, that's when President Trump made it very clear to Abbas in a very, very non-political way. He literally banged with his fist on the table and said to him, "You fooled me to believe that you really want peace when at the same time you're paying salaries to families of suicide bombers and encouraging them to continue. So you need to choose who you're standing with." And he was very angry. And then he told him, "You guys are holding Israel as a hostage when it comes to normalization with the Arab world. You're basically saying, as long as you don't have peace with the Palestinians, you'll never enjoy normalization with the rest of the Arab world." Well, I'm saying, well, obviously it never worked. So we're going to do the opposite. We're going to start normalizing relationship with the Arab world with the hope that that will now ignite the peace process. And that pulled the rug from underneath the feet of the Palestinians, who are now saying, they understand this is not going to be good because we lost our biggest weapon right now. So I think, yes, he was fooled in Washington. And then when he was here, he already made it very clear. And then the Secretary of State, Tillerson, announced that the Palestinians decided to stop paying those stipends to the families of the terrorists. And guess what happened? Less than 24 hours later, the Palestinian says, "No, we never agreed to that." So what Jared Kushner is doing right now is finding out, guys, you're telling us one thing, but you're telling the world another thing. And where are you standing right now? And that's where we stand right now at this point. But there's another thing that I think most people don't know, and I was leaked the few points that the Americans proposed to both parties in order to reignite the peace process. And I'm talking about the preliminary paper. And basically, in the preliminary paper, the two most important things are being pushed aside to later negotiations, and it's the borders and Jerusalem.
Yes.
And so, with all the respect, you know, we can, and that's exactly what happened, by the way, in the Oslo Accord. We pushed all of those things to the end. We started talking peace. But when those big things came to the table, it exploded. I don't think that what Trump is doing now is different than what President Bush the father, Bush the son, Clinton, and even Obama did. They all tried to bring peace to the Middle East. The only difference is that Trump understands the Israeli position much better than any other president before, because he wasn't bought by the Qatari money. He's not blinded by the Iranian empty promises. And he doesn't have the built-in anti-Israel sense that some of the predecessors had. And so he's way more leaning towards us right now. And that is probably why things are different right now. And this is, it projects to the whole Arab world right now. You can see the Saudis saying things and doing things that you and I would never even dream that we'd see in our lifetime.
Well, here's another thing, though, Amir. I'm talking to Amir Sarfati for the hour, and learn a lot more at beholdisrael.org. Here's the thing that I picked up on, and this was back in late June, but this was called the ultimate peace deal. That is a quote, that this would be the ultimate peace deal. Now, Amir, this is just a few miles in the Middle East. This is a small territory, a small number of acres in the Middle East. This is not like a deal that's going to affect all of Europe. I mean, it's small area, but it's called the ultimate deal.
I tell you why it's called the ultimate deal. The ultimate deal for President Trump is that he's going to see peace, not just between the Israelis and Palestinians, but between the Arab world and the Palestinians. This is why he calls it the ultimate deal. He's not looking at the little thing in the dot in the Middle East that, you know, he can't really trust, which is the Palestinian Authority. He knows that these are untrustworthy people. He understands they'll tell me one thing and do another thing. So he is now engaging the big players like the Saudis and the UEA and all of those to push on the Palestinians to make up their mind and to take a clear, firm stand. Do you ask me if it's going to work?
Yeah.
Of course not. The minute you decide that Jerusalem is not going to be discussed at this point, the ultimate deal might look ultimate, but it will be empty from substance. Because, let's face it, biblical view of this whole conflict will detect immediately that Jerusalem is the problem,
mm-hmm.
that they're going to fight over Jerusalem, that the war will be in Jerusalem, and when Christ comes back, he will put an end to it in Jerusalem. So I just believe that Jerusalem is the center of the conflict, and pushing it aside, it might look great, it might look peaceful for a season, it will only make the other side more angry. Think about it. Who is Donald Trump is betting on? Who is he taking as partners in this whole thing? He's not talking to the Russians. He's not talking to the Turks. And the Turks, by the way, have always been a channel of, so to speak, mediation between
yes.
Israelis and Palestinians. So he's not talking to the Turks. He's not talking to the Russians. He's definitely not going to talk with the Iranians. He's talking to the Saudis right now. I mean, and look what happened in Saudi Arabia right now. In Saudi Arabia, the biggest supporter of Donald Trump has just been promoted to be the crown prince, to
yes.
be the next in command. He's 31 years old, the son of the leader, and he is now had been promoted to be the second, in fact, the most powerful person right now, because the king, you know, the king is old and the king is just there, but the one next to him is calling the shots. And this is now a 31 years old guy that is an admirer of Donald Trump. He is the leader of the Sunni effort
mm-hmm.
against Iran. And if he takes to speak to Israelis and to have economic ties with Israelis, we'll do that. And Donald Trump looks at everything from the eyes of the businessman, and a deal or an ultimate deal for him is not the little piece and bites between Israelis and Palestinians. He wants to see something much greater. And for him, a Saudi and the rest of the Sunni Arab world, because the Egyptians are already having peace with Israel, and the Jordanians have peace with Israel. He wants to create a situation where the Saudis, the Egyptians, and the Jordanians together are all with Israel. This is a regional peace.
Yes.
This is something beyond yeah. the local Palestinian-Israeli issue. That's the ultimate deal.
And that is an excellent clarification, because I think some are looking at the ultimate deal as something that's confined within Israel and the Palestinians, for instance.
Nope.
And it's a much broader picture. And Amir, did you think in your lifetime you would see Saudi Arabia being brought in? Well, let's just say Saudi Arabia, perhaps not an ally of Israel, but far less of an enemy of Israel than she used to be.
You know, I wouldn't. If you listen carefully to my messages over the last 3 years, I already said that the Israeli Mossad had been in contact with Saudi officials when we contemplated on attacking Iran, and the Saudis gave us their silent approval to use their airspace 3 years ago already. And the only problem we had is that President Obama said that is not going to happen. We will not allow it. In fact, the Americans did not allow the Israelis to do what we needed to do, and the Saudis already then were siding with us. So I personally could see that, but to the degree of Saudis renewing their economic relations with Israel and
right.
the degree of Saudis criticizing Hamas, unheard of. I mean, they were the biggest supporters of Hamas until Qatar came in, and Qatar
yes, yes.
started flooding Hamas with hundreds of millions of dollars, and suddenly the Saudis were pushed to the corner, and then the Qatar, you know, decided we want industrial peace for ourselves, and we're going to support also the Muslim Brotherhood and ISIS and the Jabhat al-Nusra and in Afghanistan, the Taliban and all of that, and to the point that the Saudis could see that actually the bad boy in the neighborhood is Qatar, not not anyone else. Mm-hmm. It's a Sunni rebel in the heart of that is siding more with the Shiites than with the rest of the Sunni world. Now they're paying the price for it. It's quite fascinating. I'm watching closely what happens between the Qataris. And can you imagine, there is the president of Turkey sent 5 armored vehicles with 25 soldiers that are rolling into Doha, Qatar. Iran sends soldiers there. Right now, as we speak, there are Iranian soldiers mm-hmm. and Turkish soldiers in the capital of Qatar.
They're a huge financer of a lot of things that are evil.
Yes. They're big troublemakers because the main thing they're using is Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera had been the biggest promoter of the Arab Spring, the biggest criticizer of Israel, and the biggest supporter of Obama. And just so you know, let's go back to see how did Al Jazeera in America started. Al Gore.
Yeah, Al Gore.
Al Gore had a tiny little insignificant TV station.
Yeah.
You wouldn't put $1 million on it.
Yeah.
And the Qataris gave him $500 million for it.
Yeah.
So you could trace it all the way back to the Clintons, to the Gores, and to the Obamas. It's one big mess, and the Qataris bought their way into the wide consensus, not only of the Europeans and the American establishment, but the whole world, by buying sport teams and by buying sport events and by paying hundreds of million dollars for TV rights to broadcast sport events. This is it. And then once they buy the establishment, they reap what they sow. I think days ago, I'm not sure when, Qatar Airways was declared as the best airline in the world. Out of the blue. I mean, they are desperately looking for some validation from the world, and they're telling the world, guys, we need you to do something. We paid you hundreds of millions of dollars almost every year. Now it's time to stand with us. And I see how the whole internet is full of videos that Al Jazeera is now pushing to show how Trump is siding with the wrong side, how it's actually the Saudis that are sponsoring terrorism and not the Qataris. I mean, it's a whole network of brainwashing through media and the regular media and social media. And Al Jazeera is the main player in it. And suddenly, big portion of the Arab world is not allowing Al Jazeera to broadcast.
I'm going back to a statement you made on one of your updates. Of course, you make a lot of updates, a couple times a week at least. And in one of them, you said that you're giving every few days, you're giving an update. And you said, we don't need updates every few days. We need updates every few hours. And that's really true. That's how fast things are changing. The players, you can't tell the players without a scorecard, sort of. And old enemies are becoming allies. And of course, some of this is predicted in the Bible. And we can get to some of the geopolitical in our closing segment here, which is coming up in just a minute or two. Can you expand here, just take a minute or two, to expand on why do we need hourly updates? I mean, did you think things would ever change this fast?
Yeah, well, I'm going to say something, and I hope it's not going to sound as a criticism or anything, but yes, we need to be updated on world events, but I wouldn't call it prophecy update.
Yeah,
because
I understand.
A lot of people are actually thinking that we're updating the prophecy. Prophecies that were given 2,800 years ago were so accurate and so precise that all that is left for us to do today is detect the things that are happening in our world and literally draw so much encouragement in how fast things are moving towards the fulfillment of that which is in our Bible mm-hmm. for all those years, and for the most part, most of the Christian world never paid attention to. And so, but we also, on the other side, have to be very careful not to think that everything that happens immediately is Bible prophecy. So we have to detect some sort of a course of event process rather than pick on every speech and every visit and every word and every dot. We have to look at the broader picture. We were given an understanding. I always tell people, take 2 steps backwards and look at the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
Ezekiel gave us the full picture. Within, by the way, less than 20 verses, he gave us more wisdom than, I guess, books and newspapers and TV shows that would last months for us. So we must look at the big picture. And the big picture is very, very simple. And we have to look through that big picture, through that prophetic insight that we have from the Bible, and just look at things as they are. But, you know, we must remember that the prophecy will not change. The people ask me if God is slowing down prophecy. God is not slowing down prophecy.
You know, I want to pick up on that, Amir, and because a lot of sentiment in America right after the election in November, and as we've moved through many months now, is that God's plan for the ages is on hold. And you and I know that has not happened. God's plan for the ages is continuing to rush forward even as we speak. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I have to take my last break of the program. And when we come back, I want to talk with you about that. I want to ask you what kind of a mood you're sensing as you get feedback, particularly not only from your public events, which I think you're very encouraged by, but some of the electronic feedback that you're getting, because I'm troubled by the mood that I'm hearing an awful lot. People want to live for today, let tomorrow take care of it, so they're not having an eternal perspective. And I think we have to have that eternal perspective if we're going to keep our mood going in the right direction, otherwise we're going to get down. We'll talk about these things. Folks, I have a short segment coming up. Don't go away.
Jan will return shortly to wrap up her conversation with Amir Sarfati. First, a quick reminder. All gifts to Olive Tree Ministries are tax deductible. You can support this broadcast ministry securely online at olivetreeviews.org, or you can mail your gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Thanks to all of you who faithfully continue to underwrite Understanding the Times with your gifts and prayers. We couldn't do this without you. Jan and Amir will be right back.
Folks, this ministry has written a little end time study guide. Are we living in the last days? For your neighborhood group in your church interested in these topics, you can cover it in 12 weeks. It's got built-in questions in the study guide. Check it out in my store, olivetreeviews.org. It's in all of my newsletters, print and e-newsletters, or give my office a call. It's $9 for one copy. You can get 10 copies for $60. And those who have an interest in this topic, you can just have a 12-week study, and it's not detailed, it's not complicated. I have often called Understanding the Times Radio, Radio for the Remnant. Around the world, people have had enough of fake news, slanted news, and evidence that good people are marginalized and unappreciated. That is why this program focuses on the truth and the ultimate good news. If you would like to keep it coming to your neighborhood, please consider a tax-deductible gift to Olive Tree Ministries. Give online at olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org. You can call us business hours, Central Time, 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444, or just drop us a note. You can't financially support, let us know we make a difference in your life. Write to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Help us look at today, but with another eye on tomorrow and the ultimate hope that awaits us.
We have to be excited about two things, not only about our rapture to be with him, but also about the fact that when he comes, we come back with him, and he will put an end to that evil empire that is going to be ruled by the Antichrist. And then, of course, in his mind, he says, I understand that the best way to take over the world is indeed to loan money, but not just to people, but to governments. And that's how I can make sure they do anything I want.
Once again, with the final segment of today's Understanding the Times, with special guest Amir Sarfati, here's Jan Markell.
Jared is a great young man, went to Harvard, very smart, great.
One of the crucial assignments Donald Trump already has in mind for his son-in-law, bringing peace to the Middle East. He'll make a deal with Israel that no one else can. You know, he's a natural, Trump told the Times of London. Israel and the Palestinians are currently not even talking to each other. Getting them to agree on a deal has stumped America's most experienced diplomats for decades.
And we've been talking about some of those issues this hour. We opened looking kind of through a microscope at Europe and some of the issues surrounding Europe. We looked at Emmanuel Macron. We've looked at the peace efforts going on in the Middle East. A lot of that's been led in late June by Jared Kushner, son-in-law of President Donald Trump. Encourage you to look into both my print and e-newsletter, olivetreeviews.org. Olivetreeviews.org, you get a CD of any program, become a CD subscriber. Follow me on Facebook, Jan Markell's Olive Tree Ministries. Let me just say how active my radio guest today, Amir Sarfati, is, particularly on social media. So you need to look into Behold Israel. You can follow him on Facebook, on Twitter. BeholdIsrael.org is his website. He's one of my speakers, Understanding the Times 2017, along with Dr. Mark Hitchcock, Pastor J.D. Farag, Michelle Bachman. No cost, no registration. It's just outside of Minneapolis. And if you can't attend, you can get CDs and DVDs about a month later. Encourage you to do so. As we will help you to understand the times, contend for the faith, become a watchman on the wall. And I went out of my last segment, and we were talking a little bit about some of the difficulty of reaching people just with the reality of our day, because so many people, really all ages, but particularly young people, are focused on today, have no interest in tomorrow. And yet Amir Sarfati, my guest for the hour, has told me that particularly at his recent meetings, and I'm talking to him now in Mexico City, he's had meetings in Mexico, he's had young people attending. And Amir, I think I said to you going out of that last segment that young people today are heavily focused on today. They don't take a lot of interest in, let's just say, eternal issues, because they want to enjoy today. And yet you're seeing in some of your meetings, you're having young people turn out. What are you seeing that some of us are missing?
You know, in Mexico, both in the city of Querétaro, in Cancun, in Mérida, and even in Mexico City, I was blown away by the attendance of a very young audience. I'm talking about people that some of them were even below 18. And I'm talking about people in their 20s and in their 30s. And I can see there is a growing hunger amongst those who understand how foolish, empty, and deceitful the lifestyle that the world offers. Let's not forget, social media has a great, great effect on our young people nowadays. And the people that are behind the social media are heavily influencing the young generation to carpe diem, live the day. And they're pushing all that lifestyle that is, of course, you know, as in the days of Noah. But I'm thinking that this is where we need to tackle this issue, even through the social media. We must understand this is where the young generation is right now. I know a lot of people are not into Facebook, and I personally, before Behold Israel was established, I was away from it too. But, you know, I realized that there's a great need for that. And we can ignore it as much as we want, but they are there. They're not on TV, unfortunately. They're not on, they won't listen. People don't even listen anymore. I mean, I'm looking at in 2 Timothy chapter 3, and you see how a picture of, you know, the first nine verses is a picture of today.
Basically. That's right.
And so we have to, you know, we have to understand that. And the churches here are doing a tremendous work in not only reaching out with the gospel, but also discipling the people, giving them, you know, new beginners classes, you know, grounding them in the word. And then, of course, telling them it's not just about the past. It's not an ancient book. Everything that is written is also about today. It's more accurate than your newspapers even. And that's where even prophecy teaching goes into this. So I think we have to remember to make the Bible relevant to the young generation. And I think that Bible prophecy is an amazing tool to do that. And at the same time, you know, we must remember that that 30% of the Bible that has been ignored for all those years is only 30%. And we don't want to create a youth that is knowledgeable about prophecy, but not with the rest of the word. So we can start with prophecy. I believe it's a wonderful door to the hearts of those people. And then, of course, from there, go to the, you know, the rest of the word of God. Because, you know, until we're out of here, we must occupy.
Yeah.
We have a job here. And our job is not just to watch the news. Our job is not just to talk about the news. Our job is to preach the gospel. Our job is to reach out to the unsaved. Our job is to live godly life. Our job is to be an example, to be a watchman, to be a trumpet, to make a difference. So, you know, I always remind people to keep that balance. Yet, let's not do the mistake that the church did for all those years. The church ignored the 30%. Let's not ignore the 70%.
You stress that in your various venues. You stress that as keep a balance. And I think that is so important. And I know you were stressing it recently in some of the updates I watched of you. You know, there's something else that's kind of new that's going on. And it's spurred on by social media, not exclusively, but heavily. And it's something that troubles you and me greatly. And I think here we go back to 2 Timothy 3 as well. We see some of the decline in the character of 2 Timothy 3 is really talking to the church, not talking to the world so much. And that is, we're seeing in the Christian world sort of a new contentiousness going on, sort of a new attacking one another going on, which is so not in the character of the person we follow, the Lord Jesus Christ, who never would have behaved that way. And there's kind of a new striking out at people and calling names. And I know you're dealing with this online, and I think you've kind of called out to people, hey, let's settle down. Let's cut this out.
People are violent. I mean, let's face it. They're literally violent. They're verbally violent.
Verbally.
Yeah, but they are violent. They're not even willing to listen. All they want is to be listened to.
Yeah.
They want to make their point heard. The other day, somebody was writing and says, what is your stance on salvation? Is it through works or through faith? And so I told him, what do you care about my stand? Let's look at the Bible, what God said about salvation. And so, no, I know what God said. What do you say?
Mm-hmm.
I said, but my position is irrelevant because I teach the Word. So I will take you back to the Word. I'm not interested in knowing what the Word says. I'm interested in what you have to say. You see? And I'm saying to myself, what is going on here? We don't want to listen anymore. We just want to attack. And then, of course, he called me false teacher and false prophet and the rest of the blessings that I probably get daily online. But my point is, it is almost a crime today to direct people to the Bible because, no, they're not interested in the verses. They know the verses. They're interested in what you have to say. And we must remember, this is a sign of the end.
Yes,
when people are
exactly.
not interested anymore in the sound doctrine, and they just want to, you know, look and listen to what other people have to say about things. And we have to be so careful about those things. And beyond that, of course, there's always the people who know better about who is the Antichrist and who is not, what's going on in the world. And I'm saying to myself, since when are we political analysts? We forgot that our aim and job here is to encourage one another when we look at those things. Not frightened, not scared. Now, the Bible says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, you know, regarding all the things that will come in our rapture is, of course, the most amazing thing that we're awaiting for. We need to, you know, look at these things, and we need to set our mind on the things that are above, and yet stay focused, as 1 Thessalonians 5 tells us, be sober, be on the alert, but not attack one another and not destroy one another. You know, we need to exercise the fruits of the Spirit. And the fruit of the Spirit is way different than the ways of the world. And unfortunately, what I see is that Christians professing Christianity yet behaving maybe worse than people in the world.
I agree, Amir. I've kind of come under some of that too in recent months, and it's heartbreaking. I'd like your comment, because Russia is getting more and more involved in the Middle East and possibly a confrontation with America. I don't think we know yet. that would be jumping here to conclusions. Give me your take in minute and a half here on Russia's increased involvement in Syria, in Middle East issues.
The bottom line for Russia has nothing to do with Sunni, Shiite, Palestinian, Israeli. For them, it's oil and gas. That's it. And they're afraid that they're going to lose their possession of their, you know, port in Syria if the regime will fall. And at the same time, they want also to set the tone and as the new leader, because when Obama was there, there was no leader. They're very much troubled with Donald Trump's leadership, assuming the leadership back by America. And so we see a lot of, you know, a lot of incidents lately that happened between the two countries. I believe that Russia is positioning itself more and more on the side of Iran and Turkey, and that will lead Russia to take desperate steps, such as Ezekiel 38
and 39. BeholdIsrael.org is the place to go for lots of information. Sign up for all sorts of things. Download the app there, and you can keep up to date much more easily. And Mir, looking forward to seeing you Saturday, October the 7th. Let me just go out of the program here quickly saying that the kind of information we've given you today, it's not given to scare you, it's given to prepare you, because we live in perhaps one of the most interesting generations ever. We're watchmen on the wall. All of us are watchmen on the wall. And I echo the words of Isaiah in Isaiah 33:6 that only God is the stability of our times. And I encourage you to say with the psalmist, won't you, I trust in you, O Lord. Our times are in your hands. And I want to thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for joining us for today's Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. We continue to reach the world by reporting current events from a biblical perspective, costing us thousands of dollars. This listener-supported program is delivered each weekend, nationwide, and into your home. You can help us produce and distribute this broadcast. We invite you to partner with this ministry. With our ever-changing world, men and women of faith need to be aware of current events as reported and discussed through the lens of Scripture. With a blessed hope in view, each week Jan Markell brings you compelling guest interviews to highlight the dangers in today's world. To become our broadcast partner, please write with your tax-deductible gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. You can also help underwrite this program safely and securely at olivetreeviews.org or when you phone 763-559-4444. We're looking forward to hearing from you this week. And please continue to pray for the Olive Tree Ministries team. For daily global updates with a biblical worldview 24 hours a day, log on to olivetreeviews.org. Next week, Jan returns with another program designed to help you understand the times.